It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Happy to have you along. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Well, Georgia is now officially a presidential toss-up state, or is it? Well, at least it's kept its place as a campaign money center for both parties. Political strategists Brian Robinson and Theron Johnson are back with us to look at all that. Brian is a former deputy chief of staff for Republican Governor Nathan Deal. Theron is a Democratic strategist who was National Southern Regional Director for President Obama's 2012 campaign. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Theron, last night, former President Bill Clinton hosted a high-dollar campaign fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. Mike Pence is coming to town on Monday for an equally high-dollar Republican fundraiser. Are we seeing the candidates, though, take Georgia seriously as a toss-up state instead of just as a money machine?
Absolutely. I said on your show a couple weeks ago, Dennis, that you would be seeing President Clinton back here. Didn't know it was going to be this soon. But
I heard this one wasn't a public event. This is the old fundraiser thing.
Correct. But I know that he met with some local Democratic officials. Also, there was a small sort of clutch meeting from the fundraiser to really talk about strategy in Georgia. But listen, at a time where it's going to take millions and millions of dollars to try to win this election for Hillary Clinton, I think that people in Atlanta, we should be very, very happy that the campaign, even before his visit last night, has said that they're going to put money in the state. They've actually sent a lot of staffers here. A lot of these staffers are people who was with the Bernie Sanders campaign. These are folks coming from battleground states like North Carolina and Florida. So I think ultimately it was a good day for the president.
But is this a real play for Georgia, or is it one of those, and we see them in politics, the diversion, like beef up staff over here so the Trump campaign will have to divert some of its resources from places where the Clinton campaign is really hoping to win?
I think it's twofold. I've always sort of lived with the strategy. Every dollar that you spend in a non-battleground state, you're taking money away from a battleground state. So the more money that they spend in Georgia, people may say, you know, you should be spending that money in places like North Carolina and Florida. But here's the difference, Dennis. At a time where Secretary Clinton has a 19-point lead in Virginia, she's leading in Florida, I think, by like 6 to 7 points. She's even leading barely in North Carolina. I think the campaign has a little bit of wiggle room there to experiment in Georgia and to really see if we can expand the map.
In my meetings with Republican elected officials in Georgia, and I had extensive meetings with some just last week, there is a realization that this is a battleground state, and they're getting ready to dig in. You're hearing more and more say, look, I don't really like Donald Trump, but the stakes are too high. We can't let Democrats get a foothold in Georgia. So for Georgia Republicans, the issue of voting for Trump isn't just about whether or not you like him as a candidate. It's also about the local issue of signaling to the Democrats nationally that this is a place they can win. That would be very hurtful for us.
But when you have a candidate like Johnny Isaacson running for re-election in the Senate, someone who is widely expected to win, has even picked up Democratic endorsements, in a way, does Johnny Isaacson's strength in Georgia play against the argument of saying, hey, you need to vote for Trump to shore up Georgia for the Republicans?
Two things that Georgia Republicans have going for them right now, even if they disagree with me, is Johnny Isaacson and Nathan Deal, both of whom are very popular on a bipartisan basis. When Governor Deal vetoed the religious exemption law and campus carry, he took away issues that would mobilize Democrats and energize their base. Johnny Isaacson is a conservative but pragmatic leader who reaches out to all Georgians, shows up every January at the MLK Day ceremony at Ebenezer as one example. He does it all over the state and reaches out to non-Republican audiences because they're Georgians. And that's why he's got his own brand. And that's what I said to these elected officials last week when I spoke to a group, is let's create our own Georgia Republican brand. Let's rally behind Johnny Isaacson in this election. Really push our people out to the polls to vote for Johnny, because if there's a drop-off in Republican votes, and we have reason to anticipate that will happen, even if it's just 5 to 10%, that is a significant number in a state with 10 million people.
And a shifting demographic.
You know, our electorate is changing. We've got to make sure that people know they still have to get to the polls to vote for Johnny and then to vote for the Republican legislators and the Republican county commissioners.
Senator Isaacson, you know, came out with a new ad, and he looked very upbeat. This tap dancing that he's doing in Georgia is amazing to me, Dennis. So let's just paint the picture for your listeners. He has yet to fully endorse Donald Trump. Reverend Raphael Warnock over at Ebenezer called on him to basically come out and say, denounce what Trump is promoting in his campaign, because you have come to our church now for a countless amount of years, sit in this pulpit, the place where Dr. King basically preached and his father. So how can you, you know, come to this church and sit and represent us on this day, a man who was about inclusion, a man who was about peace, a man who was about bringing people together, and still at the same time refuse to denounce this guy who is your party candidate? It is just remarkable to me that, quite frankly, it's not left up to the Republicans to call Johnny Isaacson out on this. It's left up to Democrats. And so I think what Trump is doing is what we talked about on the show before. His GOP nomination, and now it's sealed, is going to hurt down ballot races, not only in Georgia, but from other places. So I think what Jim Barksdale has got to do, I always talk to him when I'm on the show.
The Democratic Senate.
Yeah, Democratic
candidate.
Senate again. He's got to basically figure out a way to let the Georgians know that Johnny Isaacson, where I agree he's been a great U.S. Senator for us. I know his staff personally. He's a good man, but he's a Republican, and he has some very conservative, questionable votes. But at a time where he refuses, unlike David Perdue, who's the junior senator from Georgia, has come out and just wrapped his arms all around Trump. Johnny Isaacson is doing this tap dancing that I think that Democrats cannot let him get away with.
I appreciate Theron doing that, and Johnny Isaacson appreciates Theron doing that. We would love for Theron and Jim Barksdale to go out and remind Republicans that Johnny Isaacson is a true conservative who can be trusted and relied upon to vote conservatively. That's what we want. We want to remind them of how important it is that he be part of the firewall against the agenda of a future President Clinton. Getting him back to Washington is ideologically important. It is partisanly important. And it's important on a practical level because Johnny is so important to defending the interests of Georgia in the U.S. Senate, because he has built so much trust in the Republican caucus, but also bipartisan in the Democrat caucus.
No, the challenge is what I was saying, Brian, is that Johnny Isaacson is the establishment Republican. Okay, you don't get more establishment than Johnny Isaacson. Donald Trump's rise to power is running against the establishment, particularly the Republican leadership. So what I would encourage Jim Barksdale to do is to do exactly opposite of what you just said, to say that Johnny Isaacson is the face of what's wrong with Washington, because he now has a GOP candidate who is running for president of the United States, and he refuses to basically push back on the very divisive and discriminatory things that this candidate is saying. Now, as far as his outreach to Democrats...
I don't think that's fair.
No. As far as his outreach to Democrats, just because you receive a contribution from former Governor Roy Barnes of Georgia and Senator Nunn, and also an endorsement for David Scott, does not mean that all of a sudden Democrats should just rally around Johnny Isaacson. I think that this race for the U.S. Senate is about the future. It's about who has the best ideas to go to be an independent voice in Washington to get things done for Georgians. And I just think that Jim Barksdale and his campaign has done a not so good job of articulating that to Georgians.
Yeah, I'm not sure what campaign you're talking about. I haven't heard one message from them ever. So
he's on the air. He spent a lot of his own money to be on the air.
Yeah. Look, I would also love for them to go out and say that Johnny Isaacson is the problem with Washington, because it's not a believable message. I would love for them to pour all of their money, their limited money, into the message that Johnny Isaacson is too conservative and that he's the problem with Washington, because neither one of those are believable messages.
Brian, last week I talked with Senator David Perdue, who has endorsed and campaigned for Donald Trump, and he had just finished saying that the Republicans need to be more inclusive in Georgia. And I asked him about some of Trump's language and whether that goes with that inclusivity message. And here's what he had to say.
I'm having influence with the campaign right now in some regard. And as a member of the Senate, I have some influence on sort of the direction we have there as well.
So is there any evidence, do you think, or have we seen David Perdue having any kind of meetings or messages to the Trump campaign?
I think when you have some of your most outspoken and ardent supporters, and David Perdue has been in that camp, he's been out front for the Republican nominee, when you have those folks begin to speak to the media and say those sorts of things, that is sending a message. You know, Perdue has been very consistent in his messaging. He stuck to the talking points that the Trump campaign has put out, like a good team player. When the Captain Khan controversy was erupting, Perdue stuck to those talking points, that this is a controversy generated by the media and by Hillary Clinton. So,
but Donald Trump was the one who questioned whether Mrs. Khan could say anything. Nobody prompted him to do that.
It ain't my talking points.
He's not your candidate, right?
Yeah, it's not my talking points. Those are the talking points, and David Perdue stuck to them, you know.
But here's the thing. This goes to my earlier point that I made about Johnny Isaacson and his refusal to denounce and push back and rebuke the very divisive and discriminatory messages that come out of the Trump campaign. David Perdue was the quote-unquote original outsider in Georgia. And so it's not shocking news that another outsider decides that he wants to support a now, you know, sort of national outsider. But the challenge is for the Republican Party is that what Donald Trump has done, especially with these recent staff appointments, he has brought in the guy who has been the most critical of Republican leadership in anybody, and that's Reinhart. This guy went after, he's the person that defeated Cantor. He was going after Speaker Ryan before he basically went on the Trump campaign. And so what Donald Trump is having a problem with right now is that not only is he trying to broaden his tent by reaching out to African Americans, which was a very, very flawed strategy on his part, but now he's running against the Republican Party, particularly the Republican leadership. And so for David Perdue to say, okay, you know, please calm down. Please be more statesmanlike. Please be more presidential. I think it causes a big problem for people in Georgia. And I have yet to really see anybody but David Perdue. I haven't seen Governor Deal do it. Definitely probably won't see Johnny Isaacson come out in a very public way. Oh, I take that back. I did see former Congressman Jack Kingston try to go on CNN in a very unsuccessful way and defend this guy. And I had a chance to debate him on that. But again, I think it's causing problems for Georgians.
I think this whole so-and-so's got to denounce so-and-so is just so much silliness, and particularly when it's coming from somebody like Warnock.
Both sides do it. Whenever somebody on the other side gets just, into a silliness. Verbal excess, it is campaign 101.
Yeah, and it's silliness. And I think nobody really cares who you denounce. I just don't think it matters.
Women care. That's why he's doing so terrible right now in the polls of women. African Americans care. That's why he's only getting 1% of the support.
Who? You know, Johnny Isaacson? That's what we're talking about.
No, I'm talking about Trump. I'm talking about – but see, the problem is – and I know that's talking. Let me cut you off. The challenge is, Brian, is you and I both know the Republican Party, as you knew it, the values that you stood for is totally being – deconstructed by Donald Trump and his candidacy. And the problem is when you say that people should not come out and denounce or rebuke these very divisive statements, it's not a party issue. It's not whether it's the Democratic way or doing a Republican way. It's not the American way. And that's the challenge with Donald Trump.
I don't think there's any doubt that there's a lot of division amongst Republicans right now. What I'm talking about is very specific to the Georgia U.S. Senate race. Johnny Isaacson is running his own campaign. He is running not as a generic Republican. He is running as a known commodity to Georgia voters. This is someone who has been in public office probably close to 40 years over a span of time and has served honorably. In that time, has never had any sort of ethics scandal, has never been accused of enriching himself at the public trough, has been known for showing up in 159 counties and knowing Georgians in every corner of the state. He's running on that brand. It's not his job to denounce Donald Trump. It's not his job to even defend the problems that are happening for Republicans on the national level. He's running as himself. That's what he should be doing.
All of this is taking place as a local issue is getting national attention. In Newton County, there is the proposed mosque and cemetery, which has attracted vehement opposition from some members of the community. Muslim civil rights groups have asked the Justice Department for an investigation, which it is considering at this stage. Brian, will this play into Georgia's election at all, or is this simply a local issue that is going to be watched very closely elsewhere?
This is not the first time this has happened. Kennesaw very recently in the last year had a similar issue of a mosque trying to open. There was initial resistance from the city council, a big national blowback, and the city council relented. I think you'll see the same pattern take place here. But what you're seeing is an underlying issue that we need to discuss openly without fear of offending anybody. And just be frank. When Donald Trump said that he wanted to stop Muslim immigration, when he first said it, it was very, very broad to any Muslim from anywhere in the world, 70% and more of Republican primary voters showing up to vote, and not just in Georgia, I mean in states that are much more liberal than Georgia, said they agreed with him on that. There is extreme and deep-seated consternation about Muslim immigration and movement into our communities and into our neighborhoods. And it's going to take time and patience and a lot of dialogue on all sides to get over that. Most people in America, their connection to Islam is seeing explosions on TV in the Middle East and seeing planes fly into buildings. That is what they think about. And it's not completely unfounded. They don't know these peaceful Muslims. They don't know these good American patriotic Muslims like Captain Khan. It's just not what their experience is. It's going to take time for there to be acceptance. But I do think I want to finish with this one final irony. I bet you many of the people who oppose having this mosque and Muslim cemetery in their community think that they are rabid supporters of the Religious Freedom Bill. That's irony.
If the Religious Freedom Bill had not been vetoed by Governor Deal, because let's not forget, it was actually passed by this Georgia legislature. If it was not vetoed by Governor Deal, and if it was a law, then we would not even see the dialogue that's happening in Covington, because this mosque, which has gone through the legal process, has not done anything wrong to be basically be built in this city, wouldn't even have been an issue.
It wouldn't have been an issue because it would have gone ahead.
It would have gone ahead. Yeah. And so we've got to make sure that we do not let the sentiment that Brian just clearly illustrated from some Americans and some Georgians, but most of them who are white, to feel comfortable enough to discriminate against Muslim Americans because they want to build legally a place where they want to go and worship. I agree with Brian. I think we saw this happen in Kennesaw. I think ultimately people will push back on this. I really hope that the community, though, will come together and stay very civil and really find a fair solution to this problem.
Real quickly, on the subject of the Religious Freedom Bill, everybody is getting ready for the legislature after the November election. The parties in the state legislature are formulating their strategies already. Theron, are you hearing from Democrats, Brian, you from Republicans, that the RFRA bill will be back again? Or are both parties saying, you know, maybe it's time to move past this one?
I think it definitely will be back for two reasons. One, I think that some of these Republican members who had contested races in their primaries, who survived, feel like, you know what, I did vote for it. It didn't kill me in the election. Secondly, I think that ultimately you're going to be going into a governor's race in 2018. And so I think this is going to be a part of the Republican agenda to try to shore up some of their conservative voters.
I think there'll be some discussion of it. I don't necessarily think it's going to be front and center the way that it was in the past. I think Governor Deal's veto gave a lot of cover to those who didn't want to vote for it, who didn't want to see it on the floor to begin with, and will allow them to push back some internally. A lot of folks just don't want to have to go on the record on this issue again. And we've seen that the Republicans who voted no on it last year all are coming back to the General Assembly. They're all going to win or have won their primaries already. Governor Deal's approval ratings have held firm. He's still a very popular governor, will have a lot of influence. And we're also going to have then hindsight that we don't have now, and that is what happens as blowback in North Carolina. If the Republican governor who signed HB 2 there, the bathroom bill, and there's this omnibus bill on those issues in North Carolina, if he
regarding
loses,
transgender students.
Yes. If the Republican General Assembly there and the Republican governor lose ground in this election, I think that'll send a really strong signal.
Real quickly, as a final thought, and we'll turn to another upcoming election, the City of Atlanta mayor's race. It got a little more crowded when Michael Sterling, former senior advisor to Mayor Reed, threw his hat in the ring. Is this a sign that Mayor Reed, Theron, despite his high-profile mention of Councilwoman Keisha Lance Bottoms is now saying, hey, maybe Michael Sterling is his anointed candidate, or does he have one?
You know, Michael Sterling is a person who succeeded me as senior advisor to Mayor Reed. Listen, this move for him is to be commended from a couple perspectives. One, he does represent a younger, growing voice in this city. He is a millennial, and I think it was very audacious, and he should be commended for his enthusiasm, his passion to want to serve. I don't think that his announcement shows that Mayor Reed is going to support him or not support him. I think the mayor's comments about Keisha Lance Bottoms,
who hasn't even declared yet, we should note.
Yeah, who hasn't declared yet, but it had been rumored for a very long time that she was going to run. I think honestly, he's sitting back, and I think he wants people to display the amount of organization and the commitment that he displayed and let them earn it. This is going to be a very crowded field. I think that it's going to get even more crowded. I think there's probably about 2 to 3 people left out there. And don't worry, Brian. No, I'm not running. I would love to come on this show and continue to debate you.
There are 2 to 3 people left who aren't running.
Yeah,
that's what you were going to say.
But ultimately, I think it's going to be good for the city of Atlanta, because in 2017, and it's also been rumored that Mary Norwood may decide to run as well.
So she's certainly done a lot of citywide forums and all sorts of things to keep her name up.
And she's someone who I know very well, because we defeated her in 2009. So ultimately, I think it'll be good for the city. I think we'll have a broad cast of people who want to serve as mayor.
Brian, will Republicans get behind any one of the declared candidates so far?
You know, I think there are several that would have a chance of getting that constituency, which is located largely in the northern part of the city. Mary Norwood certainly had a strong Republican turnout for her in 2009, and was almost enough for the first time in probably close to 2 generations that a white person had a chance of becoming mayor of Atlanta. I think we've got a really strong chance of having a white mayor next time, which is a fascinating dynamic, as you see more and more African Americans moving into the suburbs, almost like a reversal of historical patterns, and white people moving back into the city. Not that you're going to have a white conservative Republican mayor, but you could definitely have a white progressive mayor or one who's moderate enough that they appeal to the white Republicans in Buckhead.
I'm so happy to hear my friend Brian dispute and rebuke what Donald Trump said earlier, that not all African Americans live in bad neighborhoods and that crime is out of control and that our schools are terrible, that some of us actually can work hard and move to suburban Atlanta. But here's why I disagree with Brian, that I think that the chances are not as good as people think that we will have a white mayor in Atlanta. What we know, Dennis, is that you've been covering this for a long time. Mm-hmm. We have a model in place that's worked for 46 years since Maynard Jackson became the first African-American mayor. That means that the white business community has been very successful in being comfortable with having a person of color, male or female, in the role as mayor. And I think that the one thing that Mayor Reed can be commended on is not only his good working relationship with Governor Deal, but he has been a very pro-business mayor, but at the same time, growing the community and creating jobs. So I feel very strongly that I am not one of these people who believe just because white people have decided to come from Alpharetta and Johns Creek and Roswell and Sandy Springs and come back into the city of Atlanta is a indication that we're going to have a white mayor.
It'd be interesting to see during this election whether the racial voting patterns that may have existed 25, 30 years ago would play out now, or are younger voters more interested in other things?
I do think the dynamic has changed dramatically. You are seeing more and more white people willing to cross racial lines to vote for a minority who they feel comfortable with on policy. You know, Mayor Reed got to more than 70% in his reelection. You don't get there in Atlanta without a lot of white votes. And he did it by not scaring the business community, by not scaring your wealthier residents in the city, by focusing on infrastructure, by reforming the pensions in the city and looking at the bread and butter issues like the water system. He's done that basic blocking and tackling that good corporate citizens want to see. And so, yeah, I do think white people are more than happy to vote for a pragmatic, business-friendly, moderate African-American candidate. And we could have a really interesting white versus black matchup in the runoff where that theory is tested.
Brian Robinson is a former deputy chief of staff to Republican Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson, former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Gentlemen, thanks so much.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you so much, Dennis.